what you're being. When you're hungry for sports and beef, the only man who provides both is Kyle Gunther. Gunther's steel trap and highly functional mind is brought to you by Barbecue Pit Stop in Lehigh. Check him out online at barbecuepitstop.com. Hey, Gunther, what's your beef?
Another Ben, 1320K fan 601. What's your beef? Brought to you by the Barbecue Pit Stop in Lehigh and Layton. You're not going to find a better price on the Yoder, the Traeger, or the Big Green Egg Smoker in Salt Lake under one roof than when you go and check out the Barbecue Pit Stop. I should say in the state of Utah. You can find them in both Lehigh and Layton.
Oh, man, I did bacon. I did tri-tip this weekend on the smoker. It was amazing. Another thing I like to do when the weather is awful is take my son to one of those music stores and let him bang around on the drums, let him play some of the music, play the guitars. Now, this weekend was special because I got to bring the real decision maker of the family, the matriarch of the family, my wife, the Redbird. We brought Sis, we brought the whole fam down, and I'll be danged if I wasn't going to take that opportunity to take a look at a couple of six strings. And in fact, then that turned into a couple of 12 strings. I don't own a 12-string guitar.
Why would you?
I don't need one.
No, you don't.
In fact, one of the last things I would ever need, but I was taking a look at one, and I thought, you know what, let me try to just play this because I wanted to see what it sounded like. This guitar cost over $3,000. Now, I do not intend to ever buy a guitar that pricey, but unfortunately, one of the sales guys came over and realized that I was playing a $3,000 guitar, and I think he got his hopes up and thought, what if I give you a more reasonably priced guitar? Maybe that would interest you. So he brings me over this guitar that's in a very reasonable range. It's a nice guitar. I get excited, but I've never played a 12-string guitar, so I don't know how to tune this thing. He brings me over a tuner. We're messing around, and at this point, a dude kind of sits across from me. We're in this private room, just my wife and I and the salesman, the kids, and this guy comes in, and he starts talking to me about which guitar was used on the album. And he's whispering to me about, you'd be surprised to know that the $100 guitar was the one they actually used on the album. And I realized after a moment, he's having a conversation I haven't heard the beginning of. So I said, what album? What are you talking about? And he's talking about the band Boston, and he's talking about the guitar player, and he's showing me some sweet riffs, and he was a good guitar player there. And I thought at first, oh, maybe this guy wants to jam. It's a little weird. I don't know you, but okay, I'm here just trying to play this damn guitar. All the while, I'm trying to tune this thing. I'm tuning every one of the 12 strings. I've never done this before. It's very annoying. It's taken me about 5 minutes. After 5 minutes of sitting there with the salesman tuning this guitar, I strum one chord, and homie across from me says, hey, you know what? Let me show you something real quick. Can I see that guitar? And I said, yeah. I hand him the 12-string guitar. He proceeds to show me every single song he knows. He plays me Stairway to Heaven. After another 5 minutes of sitting there watching him play the guitar, I realize he's not going to give this thing back.
Yeah, you're never getting a 12-string.
He was not within his full mental faculties, I don't believe.
Okay.
So I didn't feel like making a rude comment to him like, hey, you damn booger breath. You just took this guitar. I just spent 5 minutes tuning this stupid thing. You took it from me. He took it from me. And he did. And I had to sit there and just sort of after a moment, I just turned around and just sort of walked away after he had taken the guitar from me.
Just slowly moonwalk out of the room.
12 bleeping strings. I sat there for 5 total minutes tuning this stupid guitar. The moment I tune it, homeboy says, let me show you a thing or two. And he takes it and he plays, what is that song? More Than a Feeling for about 5 minutes
straight. By Boston.
Oh, he sure knew the hell out of that song. And I realized this is a poor guy who's been sitting in his parents' basement playing this More Than a Feeling song from Boston.
I would imagine every guitar shop has this.
Yeah.
The guy who comes in, watches, waits for someone to sit down and says, oh, let me show you a thing or
two. Let me
show you that. So he can show off because it's the only way he has to make friends.
It was a pretty sweet riff that he knew, and he knew the hell out of that riff, and he played it over and over again. He took the guitar out of my hands. I had never been more emasculated. I've never felt less tough in front of my wife, no less.
This is why you should just never play musical instruments.
The guy might as well have just grabbed my wife on the tuchus. That's essentially what he did. I don't want to go there to play instruments. I was in a private room by myself. Jack Wagon walked in and said, let me see that guitar real quick. He said, hey, can I see that? Took it right out of my hands, never gave it back.
It's What You Beef, brought to you by the Barbecue Pit Stop in Lehigh and Layton. Go talk to Steve today. They're not going to steal from you. I promise you, you're going to love the deal you get, not just on your smoker, but your sauces, your rubs, your flavors, the different smoke pellets you need. They've also got their own meats. Go check them out at the Barbecue Pit Stop in Lehigh and Layton. That's why you never lend anyone anything. You should know that by now, though. You're in your 30s.
But
don't lend me anything. I'll steal it. That's mine.
Honestly, I was thinking, like, can I say no here? Can I say, I'm gonna play it? But he seemed a bit,
I think he tricked you. I think he duped you.
A bit under the weather.
I think he suckered you.
And so I thought, I'll be nice here. This guy wants to show me a cool jam, and he ended up just taking the heck out of that guitar. I did hear a couple arguing over a guitar. They were arguing about which song was going to be played at their wedding. And one of the gals, I guess, was going to be playing the songs, and they were just arguing about it.
So these two were coming to buy a guitar to play at their own wedding?
I think. That's unfortunately, I had to hear that many details.
I'm glad I haven't gotten any wedding invites because I wouldn't go to that wedding.
The one gal said, there's too much going on with that song, and then the one who was playing guitar took offense to that. She said, what do you mean? It's too complicated?
I can't sit and watch somebody not in a place when I have set up my soul, my heart to be in a place, and I don't mean that like I'm excited to have this emotional experience. It's quite the opposite. Unless I know I've paid money to get a musical ticket to a concert to go watch somebody play the guitar, it's so cringeworthy to watch somebody sit down and play the guitar. I despise it beyond anything else. Guitar guy, who wherever he goes, you're at a campfire. You're getting ice cream at the parlor, and he's got to pull out his guitar and serenade you with whatever one song that he has learned most recently that he's not good at yet.
What if it's 8 songs, though? See, here's the problem. I think your concern is that you've never gotten to be guitar guy.
No!
See,
that's the thing. I know so well that I never want to be guitar guy.
Oh, you think you don't want to be guitar guy pull out that guitar.
I've told you there's a coffee shop that I've started to go to, and I like to go to it a lot. They just happen to have a piano inside this shop. And about once in every 4 times I go, somebody sits down and starts playing the piano, this giant, elaborate song that they know that nobody else wants to listen to, and they play it way too loud, and I just can't think of anything but what is going through this person's head, man or woman, who is sitting down to play the piano. What are they thinking we're thinking about them?
Oh, see,
there's 30 of us in this coffee shop, and you're playing the piano. What do you want us to do?
Because
nobody's
going to
clap after.
No one's
going to stop and watch you.
No, people will clap. No, I'm the opposite.
It's never happened.
I really enjoy when somebody there's outdoor pianos at various parts in our country. I've seen people walk up and just play them. I think it's cool. Would people give us their amazing gift? If you're a piano player and you see one in public, just sit down and fire up.
If I stumble upon your gift, I agree with you. That's a gift. If you come in and throw it all over me where I am clearly there to do something, even if it's just consume liquid, you're infringing on my free time.
Oh, no,
you're hurting my life.
I think you've given yourself too much sanctity inside the coffee shop.
All right. Let's welcome in our next guest, talking about the NBA trade deadline. It is his birthday, so tweet at him at Trip Jazz. So our Utah Jazz insider, Tony Jones. Happy birthday, Tony!
Hey, Tony!
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you guys.
All right, Tony, the Jazz did not get any birthday gifts today, at least not yet when it comes to the trade deadline. One of the names that had been bounced around, and you talked about it in your most recent article, Lou Williams actually ends up going to the Houston Rockets. They give up a first-round pick. Was this a name you think the Jazz were interested in, and is it a loss if they didn't land him?
You know, I think it's a loss because I think, you know, if the Jazz had landed him, they would have played him with Alec Burks on that second unit, with Joe Ingles on that second unit, and they would have played him a lot at the point guard spot. There were a number of teams that were interested, especially playoff teams, and essentially it became a betting war. And, you know, one of the things that the Jazz were not going to do, they weren't going to part with a rotation guy just to get another guy, and that's what they were interested in. And, you know, frankly, Houston parted with a rotation guy plus a first-round pick and Corey Brewer. So I think that you know, it became a bidding war, and I think that the Jazz didn't want to go that high.
You know, it took Gordon Hayward a little while to get comfortable in the actual All-Star game. You had talked about the freedom and the openness that he would have in that game. Were you surprised that it took him a while to get into a rhythm and to find his role?
Well, I mean, it wasn't a fact that it wasn't him getting into the rhythm. It was him. It was a matter of him getting his teammates to basketball. You know, he played almost all of his minutes were almost exclusively with Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook wasn't passing the ball to anybody that night. I mean, I distinctly remember a play where Westbrook got a rebound. There was a wide open Klay Thompson in the corner. Instead of passing the ball to Klay Thompson, Westbrook dribbled the ball into the very spot that Klay Thompson was standing, literally moved Klay Thompson at that out of that spot off the dribble, and took a shot from the spot that Klay Thompson was standing. That's when I realized that nobody other than Russell Westbrook was getting the ball when Russell Westbrook was on the floor. You know, he was blatantly gunning for the MVP trophy, and eventually, you know, because all of the West guys wanted Anthony Davis to get the MVP, you know, Steve Kerr eventually had to take Russell Westbrook out of the game in the fourth quarter to let that happen. So, you know, when it came to Gordon Hayward, I thought that, you know, he just kind of got caught up in the wash a little bit, and, you know, I thought that he did what he should have done in the second half, which was any rare time that he did touch the ball, he just went to the basket and scored.
Tony Jones is our guest, 1320K fan. Did you get the impression Gordon liked his trip to New Orleans? Was it beneficial for him?
Oh, he loved it. I mean, let's make no mistake. I mean, he absolutely loved it. He loved the ambiance. He loved the weekend, everything that it held. I mean, he was out enjoying the nightlife with his wife Robin, with Johnny Bryant and his wife Vanessa. You know, he loved, you know, just everything that, you know, NBA All-Star Weekend had to offer. You know, it was just the actual game that kind of threw him off a little bit. But it threw everybody off because, I mean, I think that the game, you know, I think we can all agree that the game was a little bit of a farce in terms of, you know, it wasn't competitive and it was just 48 minutes of basically people throwing alley-oops to each other. So, you know, I think that the game itself absolutely has to be better. But the product of the weekend, I mean, it's really nothing like All-Star Weekend.
You know, Gordon Hayward has said he's sick of watching basketball in April. He wants to be a playoff contender. Clearly, I'm sure, like every player, he wants an NBA championship ring. But what do you think is the biggest driving force behind Gordon's decision this summer when he eventually opts out?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I take him at his word when he says that he wants to win. And I think that's going to be huge. And I think that, you know, comfortability with his situation is going to be huge. And I think that Gordon wants to be, you know, the face of whatever franchise that he's in. You know, I happen to think that he's going to stay with the Jazz. I've maintained that. I think that the Jazz have a lot of significant advantages. I think that they can offer more money than anybody. I think that they can offer at least the possibility of Hayward qualifying for that Supermax extension if he were to make All-NBA one year. You know, and I think that his relationship with Johnny Bryant, you know, I think that if he were to go somewhere else, he would never be able to duplicate that relationship. So I think that the Jazz have some advantages there, and I think that as long as they continue to show him that they are serious about winning, I think that they have a good chance of keeping him.
Tony Jones, our guest, 1320K fan. You also reported that there's some interest around the league in Derek Favors, and the Jazz might also be mutually interested in making a move if the price is right. Do you have any impression of what that price might be and which teams might be looking at him?
You know, I reported that the Phoenix Suns had expressed an interest in him, and I think that, you know, in terms of the Jazz, I think that they're just kind of gouging interest in him a little bit. But at the end of the day, I think that Derek Favors stays with the Jazz past the deadline. Something may happen, but I'd be surprised if it did. I think that the Jazz, you know, think that if they can get him as close to healthy as possible to where he can just, you know, be 90% in the playoffs or 80% in the playoffs, where, you know, the first round is stretched out. There's 3 or 4 days in between each game in the first 4 games of a series. Then I think that he can, you know, be pretty close to the old Derek Favors. He's not going to be completely healthy this year. He's not going to be 100% healthy this year. I think that he needs an off season for that. But if he can get as close to possible to being healthy, then, I mean, he's still a tremendous asset for this front court and for this team. And plus, when you look at, you know, what's going on around the landscape, I mean, you know, there's still the Memphis Grizzlies out there who play two bigs. And obviously, everybody knows that Boogie Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins, went to the New Orleans Pelicans. And now he and Anthony Davis are in the same front court. You know, so, I mean, you look at Derek Favors, and if you look at him and you say, hey, if he's really healthy, if he's 100% healthy, you know, the front court is dynamic. The big question is just, is he going to be healthy?
Derek Favors has been open about how the trade from New Jersey really bothered him. Trade rumors a few years ago with the Jazz really bothered him. Clearly, he's been involved in some very public talks. Now, this time around, could this round have an emotional effect on Derek Favors?
You know, I honestly think that his mind is elsewhere right now. I think that his mind is on trying to get healthy. And, you know, I think that, you know, that supersedes. I mean, when you were talking about what bothered him about New Jersey is that they gave up on him. Avery Johnson gave up on him so fast. Here was a number three pick, and, you know, they kind of instantly, you know, stuck him on the bench. He was outside of the rotation. And then, boom, in the middle of his rookie year, you know, he's traded to, you know, Utah, and he's an inner-city kid from Atlanta. You know, so that bothered him. You know, I don't think that the public trade talks a couple of years ago at the NBA draft, I don't think that bothered him nearly as much as what happened with New Jersey. So I think that at the end of the day, he's 25. You know, he's a father. He's a lot more mature than he was 6-7 years ago. So I think that his mind is in a different place right now.
You can find him on Twitter, @TribJazz. Tweet him his 30th happy birthday wishes. It is Tony Jones. Tony, thanks for joining
us. Definitely 30.
All right. Great stuff, Tony. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
There he is, Tony Jones, our Utah Jazz insider. You can read him in the Salt Lake Tribune, give us a breakdown on the Utah Jazz and what's going on at the trade deadline.
Well, I think Lou Williams would have made great sense for the Jazz. Obviously, he's going to end up in Houston now. And then the question is, are you prepared if you face Houston now to have them have an even more dynamic backcourt? You're clearly not going to match up strength there. The Jazz are trying to use Rudy Gobert to clog up the paint, but Lou Williams is better at getting to the paint than maybe any player in the NBA right now.
I think looking at the Jazz here in this at this trade deadline, and Dennis Lindsay is notoriously pretty patient at the deadline. Maybe the Jazz don't make a move. If they do, maybe it does just end up being a guy like Shelvin Mack for a trade exception from the Cleveland Cavaliers. And all that is doing is trying to make sure that you don't have issues in the locker room down the stretch where a guy like Shelvin Mack isn't unhappy that he's not getting playing time. You do eliminate a guy in Dante Exum having to look over his shoulder. I won't be surprised at all if that's the type of move the Jazz end up doing because, again, getting rid of Derek Favors is a big shakeup. Derek Favors has been a part of this team for a long time. He's a part of the culture. He's a part of the locker room. Everybody knows him. Yeah, he's certainly not at 100%, which is a dangerous time to trade a guy when he's not fully healthy because you're never sure what he's going to be able to bounce back to, and maybe you sell too low. I think in that sense, like Tony said, odds are Derek Favors is still on this team come Friday, and I would bet that ends up being the case, but we'll track it down for you, and we'll keep an eye on the trade deadline. When we come back, we're going to talk about BYU spring football with Braden Hansen. You can improve your life, not through the trade deadline, but by going and checking out Trilogy Medical Center.
They're going to give you great results, whether it's trying to get your hair back by the summertime. Maybe you're trying to get a little bit of that Botox action. That's the bro version of Botox. I had the Botox. The results lasted for months. They came in, 4 or 5 days? I didn't have to miss any work. You're going to love the vibe down there at the Man Cave at Trilogy Medical Center. This ain't your wife's day spa. Go down there. Go see the amazing ladies down there. They're going to make you feel comfortable, and they can make you look better.
Over 40% of their clients are males. Yeah, you're not going to walk into anything that they've never seen. Go check out Trilogy Medical Center today online at trilogymedicalcenter.com. Talking BYU spring football with Braden Hansen. Coming up next, Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the...
Gunther and Ben, 1320K fan, 625. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. Very, very happy Tuesday to everybody out there.
Yeah, again, it was a rough weekend for me personally, Ben. I was jibbing all weekend. And that's
which
a term.
Is a thing for snowboarding.
Yeah, no, I know about it. I was jibbing. That's what I do. I hit rails on my snowboard. And I know this because I also heard some bros in front of me in line this weekend talking about jibbing. And they were saying it so loud, they obviously wanted women to hear. So I asked my wife when I got back in the car, I said, "Hun, if guys talk about jibbing in front of you, what does that do to your sensual intensity level?" And she asked me what jibbing was.
You and I never talked Major League Baseball because we don't have a Major League Baseball franchise. There was great news, though, just announced by ESPN. Major League Baseball has approved a change to the intentional walk rule. Instead of making a pitcher throw four superfluous pitches, they are just going to allow a signal now from the dugout that allows Bryce Harper to be walked 70 times a year and not have to fake stand there for 8 minutes while everyone says, "Oh, man, this is boring."
Well, if you want to do an intentional walk as a strategic move, then, yeah, have a signal in place so you can speed the game up. But this is, again, a professional sport taking a look at the pace of play.
Yep.
For the sake of nothing else other than trying to make the sport more consumable in person and on television. I believe it was ahead of Disney. One of the Disney corporation came out and said they're not happy when they watch ESPN's product. They want to change the paradigm of television. And I've said for a long time that may include more product placement, but fine. If that means we get more uninterrupted NFL action.
Sure.
But you don't blur out the soda pop can on the sidelines. My heavens, so be it. Put a Pepsi, Honda, Cola, Ford, Toyota logo on the field. Who cares? Put it out there.
I'm with you. Put logos on the field. Put logos on cleats. Logos on jerseys. Yeah, if you can cut out one additional commercial break every half, you're going to see big results as far as the speed of the game goes.
Put product placement in every scene. If you love a show where they're ripping cigarettes, well, show that the cigarette's the good brand. Show the brand the one everybody likes.
I love the good brand.
The good brand.
Coming up next, coming up in football at 50, we're going to be giving you a breakdown on the latest news in the NFL. That's coming up about 20 minutes from right now, including one first ballot Hall of Famer who may be on his way to prison. We'll tell you who that is. Stay tuned. Right now, though, let's talk BYU spring football with our next guest. You can find him on Twitter at BHouse76, former BYU and NFL offensive lineman Braden Hansen. Braden, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Braden.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, so when it comes to spring football, you know, now that BYU is going to be in its second year, slowing down the tempo, you know, how much bigger could this BYU offensive line potentially get? I mean, could these guys on average be maybe 10 or 15 pounds heavier this season?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think so, especially with Tanner Mangum coming in at the Ram, you know, and moving towards maybe a more pro-style offense. I definitely think our offensive linemen can gain a couple pounds and help Tanner in the pass game.
Braden, how big of a shift is that, blocking for a guy like Tanner Mangum versus blocking for a guy like Taysom Hill?
So I played for Max Hall, and then I played for Riley Nelson, and I would say the comparison is probably similar because with Max Hall, he was a pocket passer. He had great awareness. He'd move around a little bit, but he was, you know, throwing the rock downfield, where Riley, like, you never knew what was going to happen. He'd all of a sudden just take off running, and you just kind of had to adjust and go with it. And so for me, you know, it was fun both ways, but it was nice having Max back there where, you know, you just had to make the defense come through you, you know, as opposed to where Riley was moving around and you kind of never knew where you needed to be. So
Tanner Mangum's never had a full off season as a complete starter. What could this year do for his own development?
I think the biggest thing is just confidence. When you have a full year underneath your belt, I remember coming home from a mission myself, and going into that first spring ball and first season, it's just, you're trying to swallow so much information that it's just tough. It feels like a fire hose, but that next year it slows down a lot. The offense is just so much more familiar, and so I think it'll really slow down as confidence will be there, and then the offensive line will just have an opportunity to gel with him and, you know, really get ready.
Braden Hansen's our guest, 1320K fan. Braden, the last two games we've really seen Tanner Mangum as the starter was the bowl game against Utah, the bowl game against Wyoming. He's 1-1, though his stats didn't necessarily look like they did early in his career as a freshman when he took over after Taysom got hurt. Any concern for you there, or is he just the guy who needs a few more reps in the offseason?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to experience. You know, it's the end of the season, people are banged up, and so to come in at that point, you haven't been able to gel with those players, that offensive lineman, those running backs, those wide receivers like Taysom was able to. And so, you know, I can't really judge him off of those two last games. So I think having this offseason, this spring football, will be the biggest gains for Tanner, and then we'll be able to, you know, be ready to rock and roll come September.
Is Jonah Trenuman enough of a talent on his own to be that number one guy next year? I mean, it sounds like Moroni Lualu-Putu-Tau might be moving to tight end. I mean, does BYU need to find another playmaker at wide receiver?
I think so, and I hope they have someone in the program that will step up, and I don't know who that next person is going to be. But I remember each year when I was at BYU, it seemed like someone stepped up. J.D. Falsa stepped up. You know, there was always someone that was able to just step up and become a playmaker. And so I hope that, you know, they need to find someone, because we got to have a couple more threats, especially some deep threats.
I know a lot of players really like playing for Garrett 2J on the offensive line, but you see what Empey has done now. He's come in and really rallied this offensive line, which was made up of a bunch of seemingly spare pieces last year. Do you like the direction that Mike Empey is taking this offensive line, especially when teamed with Ty Detmer?
Absolutely, yeah. Coach Empey knows what's going on. He has the offensive lineman to be powerful and deadly this year. You know, you have Kiefer Longson, you know, Tom Shove, like, there's just so much talent there. They're young, but they're going to have, you know, a lot of years of experience, and I think it's just building up kind of what we saw back in 2007, 8, 9 with Jake Caressa and Matt Reynolds and Dallas Reynolds and those guys, where they were there for a long time and were able to have that experience that just led to an offensive line that, you know, it wasn't, you know, year in and year out, there wasn't, you know, any mishaps. We were just able to kind of just replace that one or two offensive linemen and then just keep having the same success. And so I think it's heading in the right direction, and that's, you know, what we're going to see in the future with the offensive line.
What was that like for you, Braden, as far as experience goes, when you became a starter throughout multiple years and, of course, multiple different positions? But did you feel your comfort level growing each year that you had been a starter?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just the game, it just slows down, really. And I think it's just once you kind of get accustomed to things. Like my freshman year, you know, our center, Terrence Brown, and R.J. Willings would make calls, and trying to listen to them and watch the defense, and I would just, you know, blow my mind every single play. Where, you know, come your junior, senior year, you've seen the blitzes, you know the calls, you're just so much more comfortable, and it just slows down and just able to play football. And so I think that's where they're going to get.
When you watch this Kalani Sitake-led team now, and it looks like this defense is continuing to improve, the defensive line was good last year, the linebackers look like they're going to be incredible, this might be one of the better secondaries we've seen at BYU in a long time. What's that like as an offensive player when you know the defensive side of the ball is going to help you get the ball back, is going to put your team in good situations? What's that like as an offensive player?
It's huge. It just comes down to confidence, right? Playing with Bronco Mendenhall and just knowing that the defense, week in and week out, series in and series out, like, they're gonna get you the ball back. They're gonna stop them three and out. Like, we just always had such great confidence in our defense, and so that just does a huge to be able to know that the ball is gonna get back in your hands and know that you're gonna have more than one or two chances, you know, if the game's coming down the line. And so I think that just does a lot for your offense, just knowing that you can rely on your defense. You don't have to put up 50 points to win a game. You have a defense that's gonna be stout and gonna hold that offense. So
what advice would you give to any BYU players who are potentially going to be taking that undrafted free agent route into the NFL? What was the biggest thing you learned?
That's a good question. Just giving it your all, you know, being an undrafted free agent, especially, you know, I had that injury my senior year, and so it looked like I was going to get drafted, and then with my injury, didn't get drafted, and so that was kind of a humbling experience, you know, thinking that you could get drafted and not, and so it's just basically just going and giving it your all each day. And so to those players, I would just say, be ready to give it your, you know, 100% effort every day. You know, right now, especially preparing for combine and those things, getting in, you know, two workouts a day, just making sure that your body's right. And then come camp, be ready to ball out. Cause at that point, you know, even the kids that got drafted, you know, they're just football players. They're going to put on the pads just like you do and, you know, just go and take it to them.
How far behind the eight ball did you feel you were when you didn't get drafted, when you were going into a camp and saying, man, I know that guy was their third-round selection or their fourth-round selection? Did it feel that way noticeably when you got on the field?
Yeah, and so I didn't. So talking with people, like, it was just kind of surprising. So, like, I was talking with another – when I was with the Raiders, I was, you know, we were just in the room talking with everybody, and one of the other kids was a second-round draft pick, and I had no idea up to that point watching him – out at practice. He just seemed like a player to me. And so I think the biggest thing is not focusing on those things. Who cares where they were drafted or how they were drafted? I think you just have to worry about yourself and beating whoever lines up next to you, whether it was offensive line, defensive line, you know, one-on-one competition, just making sure that you are at your best. I think if you start looking into who was drafted where, or, hey, this guy's a third-round draft pick, I think it just, you know, you start losing focus, and, you know, I just don't think it's a recipe for success.
Do you have any early expectations for the 2017 BYU football team? Any ideas what their record could be?
I think it could be special. You know, you start off the season with three games like BYU's going to start off with in 2017. It could make for a special time. I remember in 2009 when we started off, we beat, you know, Oklahoma at Texas Stadium. You know, the Provo, when we came home, there was like 5,000 people at the airport. And so it just was a special time. And so I think if BYU prepares right now, it could do something special those first three games.
You can find him on Twitter at BHouse76, former BYU and NFL player Braden. Really great stuff. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Braden.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Good stuff from Braden there, getting us ready for BYU spring football. And again, that kicks off a week from today. We'll have all your coverage right here on 1320 KFAN. When we come back, might the Jazz be in business to reunite with a former controversial Jazz man? We'll tell you the latest rumors to just hit the market. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon. The football station.
I'm 1320K fan, 641. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. A very happy Tuesday to everybody out there. NBA trade deadline coming up on Thursday, 1 p.m. our time. Weird rumor hitting the streets right now. Tim McMahon, who's actually in Utah for most of the Jazz games right now, he works for ESPN. He's got a story going online right now. According to his latest tweet, sources tell he and Mark Stein at ESPN that the Jazz have expressed interest in reacquiring Deron Williams via trade with the Mavericks.
Deron Williams is a controversial name for a couple of reasons, but none of them involve his issues on the court.
No.
Deron Williams was great for the Jazz. He was an all-star, and then off the floor, he really embraced the state. In fact, I'm sure most people listening have seen him at some point here. I saw him a couple of months ago randomly at a restaurant down the street.
Yeah, he lives here in the offseason.
He's here, and you know, you see a 6'4" dude in a $100,000 vehicle, and you know, you realize he stands out a bit, and that's why most guys don't live in a place like Salt Lake, or you know, they don't live in Minneapolis or anything like that. They move to warmer cities. Deron Williams' family clearly embraces this area, and I think he makes sense if he's willing to come back and the Jazz fan base is willing to forgive him. And you know, maybe now that the dust has settled with he and Jerry Sloan, we can all kind of put this thing behind us.
He's an expiring contract. I think his contract ends at the end of this season. He's owed $9 million through the end of the year. If the Jazz looked to clear money, and what I mean by that is clearly longer-term contract, which would be, let's say, Alec Burks and his $11 million or so that the Jazz owe him for the next three seasons, they could make this trade. Deron Williams comes in. He expires after this season. The Jazz make good at the end of D. Will's career. They don't have this weird aura hanging over them, this black cloud of how that all ended. And the Jazz can say, look, we're happy with Deron. It looks good for the rest of the free agents in the NBA. Say, hey, if Deron was able to come back and make amends with the Jazz, maybe I'd go play there. Or maybe Deron has a long-term future with the Jazz at a very small price, coming off the bench, backing up George Hill, and I think the Jazz would be happy with that. It's not the most outrageous thing I've heard, and it actually makes sense on a lot of fronts. Would Jazz fans re-embrace him? I think they would. If he plays for your team, you root for the jersey. You don't necessarily just root for the players.
Well, but you said something interesting there, that Deron Williams would come in to be the backup to George Hill. Is D-Will ready to be that, especially back in Utah? I mean, is he going to be a guy that embraces that role? And what type of an effect will that have on the Jazz's locker room? The Jazz had a much different talent level back when D-Will and Boozer and AK were on the team. Ronnie Brewer was a key member of that squad. I mean, the Jazz were a veteran group. Paul Millsap knew which way the wind was blowing. I mean, these guys were out there making money, a ton of money, and having success. I mean, that team made the Western Conference Finals. is Darren Williams a good influence now at this point in his career, or is he just kind of another guy in the Joe Johnson mold who, look, Joe Johnson's been great when the Jazz need him, but I don't think anybody's building around 35-year-old Joe Johnson.
Yeah, you're not building around Darren. Again, he would come in, and he signed a one-year, $10 million deal this offseason, so that's why he would be an expiring contract, and the Jazz bring him in. It allows them to get out of a contract in Alec Burks, and Darren Williams is probably better than Alec Burks is right now. Make no mistake about that. Now, he has started all 40 games that he's appeared in for the Mavericks, so maybe that would be the wheel you have to figure out if you can grease. Do you start he and George Hill together? Does he come off the bench? Is he okay doing that at this point in his career? George Hill's certainly not going to go to the bench, and the Jazz won't ask him to do that because the Jazz are going to want George Hill to stick around long-term to be their point guard, and I think the Jazz are going to try and ink him to a deal, I would suspect, immediately after the trade deadline once they realize how much money they exactly have to spend.
Does Gordon Hayward want this deal?
That is a question worth asking. Do Darren Williams and Gordon Hayward get along after the high-profile throwing incident where, in his rookie year, Darren Williams threw a ball at Gordon Hayward for not running a play correctly? I would suspect that is water under the bridge at this point. And look, this is outrageous. The idea of this happening, I think, is pretty slim. I would not bet on this happening. But again, the Jazz have to explore options. And if you're looking for a better-than-average point guard who you think could come off your bench, save you money in the long term, Darren Williams fits the bill, and he's got an experience in the state. He may be willing to come here and play for a team that's going to make the playoffs versus Dallas, who's not going anywhere. Dallas is at a point where they're going to try and get rid of Darren Williams. They might cut Andrew Bogut after the trade deadline if they can't trade him because they traded for him from the Golden State Warriors, and they're going to win 25 games this year and try and get a better draft pick. They need to unload talent, and the Jazz are in a good spot to take it on.
Well, on a related note, I've never watched the show Shark Tank until very recently, and I'm in love with it. I love the concept for it, and I love Mark Cuban's role on that show. If the Jazz were to get involved, I would assume they start every conversation with Mark Cuban by saying, "All right, Sharks, here's a proposition for you."
Like they line up like that?
The show Shark Tank is so intoxicating. I'm assuming all these stories and products are real, but it's just a fascinating idea. Darren Williams coming back, though, would be very much about the Jazz mending fences. Yep. And D. Will realizing, hey, man, you know, things haven't gotten better since he left. Darren Williams was arguably a top 3-point guard in the league with the Jazz. He's not backed that up since then. The Jazz were better with D. Will, and it feels like that may have been reciprocated by Darren Williams. The kids love it here in Utah. You know, he may be willing to try to mend things with Jerry Sloan too, and maybe that's going to mean more to him personally down the line. You know, maybe he's matured now, but also this is just about the talent at point guard. And if Darren Williams and a guy of his talent level is willing to come to the Jazz, even if it's just for the rest of this season, why not? The Jazz can spend money. If there's a will here, I think the Jazz need to explore it.
And looking at this conversation of Darren Williams potentially rejoining the Jazz via trade with the Dallas Mavericks, who was on that team that he was on? I mean, again, the only hangovers who played for Jerry Sloan. Look, Derek Favors never played for Jerry Sloan. He came to the Jazz in the Darren Williams trade. The only guy who's on the Jazz right now who played for Jerry Sloan with Darren Williams is Gordon Hayward. Now, it does so happen that he's the star, and the Jazz are trying to build around him, and that's where this gets a little bit awkward. But again, if you were to go out and get Darren Williams, I think the Jazz would improve their roster. They'd be better, and if they can unload salary like the 3 years that they still owe to Alec Burks, it's probably a win-win scenario. Kevin O'Connor is gone from the Jazz. I know he still fills kind of a spot role for the team as a scout at times and comes in when they have big announcements, but he's not a huge piece of the Jazz anymore. There's no ill will between Dennis Lindsay and Darren Williams or Quinn Snyder and Darren Williams. I think the Jazz would welcome a talent upgrade like this, especially if they got him at low or no cost.
Darren Williams makes sense culturally. He makes sense on the floor. It's a great move for the Jazz. It's really a no-brainer if, in fact, it's really going down. And again, the Jazz are not the organization that leaks things on accident. This story was leaked to gauge fan reaction. I'd be stunned personally if Jazz fans didn't want Darren Williams back. Maybe there's a few that feel like, all right, you know, he disrespected Jerry Sloan. And maybe he did. But also, I think the Jazz would tell you that there could have been an easier way to solve that. The Jazz got rid of Darren Williams and then shortly thereafter lost Jerry Sloan as well.
She just killed Ronald Reagan.
Sorry, I just knocked down my life-size cardboard cutout of Ron Reagan. In fact, of course, it's not life-size because this cardboard cutout is only 6 foot four.
This building couldn't hold Ronald Reagan.
You know dang well Ronald Reagan was 6 foot nine or 6 foot ten.
Also, don't underestimate that Darren Williams, as much as jazz fans may not like him, and obviously what happened with he and Jerry was very serious, he's been nothing but a very good pro to the media. He hasn't said a lot wrong. He's had a couple of tiffs with a couple of national guys who have come in and kind of insulted him. But for the most part, he's a good media guy. He would say the right things when he came back to Salt Lake. He would thank Dallas. He'd say he's happy to be back in Salt Lake. He's excited to play with Gordon again. He would understand it's Gordon's team. He'd be excited about being on a playoff team. All of those things would be easy for Darren Williams to be able to sell himself on and then sell the media that he'd bought back in. And then you're talking about 3 months. In April, he's done playing for the Jazz when they get eliminated from the playoffs, and he goes and signs wherever he wants.
Yeah, he doesn't have to buy in. Exactly. There's nothing to buy in with. The Jazz are in the playoffs now for the first time since D. Will was in town.
Right.
The Jazz haven't built much since D. Will left. They've had some situations where they're knocking on the door. They brought in Enes Kanter and then jettisoned him. They brought in Trey Burke and then dropped him. You know, the Jazz now have to figure out if they can build around Gordon Hayward, but they need to get to the playoffs and try to win one game. So D. Will does nothing but help the Jazz.
Let's get to football at 50.
1320 KFAN brings you football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
Football 50, 1320K fan. Police report officially issued in the Tom Brady jersey stealing case. Tom Brady's Super Bowl winning jersey. Game worn jersey was stolen out of his bag, at least according to Tom Brady, during the Super Bowl celebration on the field. In the police report, it estimates that the item's value, the jersey, is about $500,000.
These jerseys are so hard to get off your pads after a game. They're covered in blood and dirt, and they're dripping wet with sweat. This was no accident. If it was taken, it was taken by a member of the team or a member of the equipment staff or a member of the media. Now, in my opinion, the most likely candidate would be a member of the media because we are all willing to steal athletes' memorabilia. You don't think Trey Burke got out of here with all of this stuff, do you? No, in fact, I stole a pair of Trey Burke's compression shorts many years ago. That's why I've not been back allowed at a Jazz practice.
But it's also why you've looked so thin from the waist down.
Oh, man, have I been squeezing into these shorts.
Nice.
Trey Burke's a medium. I mean, here's the thing. I'm a double XL when it comes to waist size. But I'm willing to wear that memorabilia because I care so much about Trey Burke. The thing is, if you steal Tom Brady's jersey, which I'm assuming it's actually been stolen now, I don't think Tom Brady would fabricate this story and put himself in legal trouble.
Right.
You can't sell this jersey. You can't talk about it for at least a decade, but I don't think there's a statute of limitations on stolen property. If you steal a Van Gogh painting, you don't have to wait 7 years and then sell it.
Yeah, certainly not on Tom Brady's jersey, an item like this, which is there's just so many things involved with what they could. I'm not trying to be a legal expert, but they would find something to charge you with one way or another. $500,000 too. I mean, that's felony stuff. I mean, that's big time money if you're talking about stealing that. It's not a $20.
Anything more than $400 is felonious behavior.
Anything, you're not stealing a pair of socks or something. I just thought
it was a parenthetical note.
A jersey worth a huge number that everyone knows about. Another guy might be heading to jail. That's Darrell Revis. Unfortunately, the future first ballot Hall of Famer, formerly known as Revis Island, got in a fight over the weekend. At least that's what's alleged. He's been charged with assault for beating up two players in his home city.
Beating up just two men.
Two men, I should say, in his home city of Pittsburgh. Apparently one fan approached him, tried to get a photo of him. Revis took the phone out of his hand, deleted the photos, at least tried to, and then threw the phone, which led another man to come over and kind of get into a fight with Revis. Somebody knocked out both of these guys who had at some point approached Darrell Revis, and now police are investigating whether it was Revis himself who knocked these guys out or somebody from his entourage. Revis is obviously hoping that his bag man or whoever in his entourage will take the fall for this, and Revis can settle the lawsuit eventually and avoid jail time for whoever this guy is. But there's a chance if they can't do it that Revis, if he is found to be the one who committed assault here, he could be facing actual jail time.
Well, but I doubt that's actually going to happen. I mean, this is a case of a bunch of drunken people getting into a disagreement there. And, yeah, there's a big name involved, so it's getting headlines. But this sort of thing happens each and every week outside of these nightclubs there. Yeah, there is an audio of the actual incident, but you can't tell whose voice is what.
Right, you can't see who's talking.
No, you can't see who's talking. You can't see what's going on. Now, I don't know what the NFL will do as a result of this, but I know the Jets need to be looking to cut Darrelle Revis with or without this incident. Darrelle Revis gives horrible effort, and I wouldn't employ him on any football team anymore.
Certainly
I think
not
his
anymore.
Career is done.
Well, he's made $90, $110 million. Something. I mean, he really has made – he signed several huge contracts with incredible guaranteed money, usually not the type of money you see a single defensive player make, but he really has ridiculous career earnings.
And he's willing to talk openly about it, the importance of the money. And look, we're a capitalist society. That's not a bad thing, but – for some reason in athletics, we expect everyone to be altruistic. We expect everyone to say, oh, it's not about the money. Well, it is. I mean, right. It really should be in a lot of cases.
Especially if your career is 12 years long. We want to hang out with you guys coming up on Friday. Gunther and I are going to be at the Southtown Expo Center for the Wasatch Golf Expo. It's coming up the 24th and the 25th. We've got a four-pack of passes to the Wasatch Golf Expo to come. More importantly, check out the golf. But Gunther and I are going to be down there as well on Friday from 3 to 7. Give us a call right now. We always love late in the show to give away prizes to listeners.
It's so nice of you to give it away.
Around. Give us a call, 801-483-1320. 801-483-1320. Be the third caller through. You're getting yourself some passes to come hang out with Gunther and I at the Wasatch Golf Expo this February 24th and 25th, which is Friday and Saturday.
We got to encourage you, Ben. I mean, if we don't play that song, you won't give anything away.
Well, whatever. Big thanks to our producers today, JP Chunga. Find him on Twitter at JPKFan.
Panda,
Ray
Panda,
White.
Panda, 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 Panda.
There's a really good chance you're going to talk to Ray White on the phone. Come up here in about 1 second. You can
Started
find him on
from
Twitter.
The bottom, now we're here.
At Tyson
Started from
K-Fan.
The bottom, now the whole team here.
It is Tyson Whiting. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 K-Fan.
Buy a chopper and have a doctor on speed dial, I guess. Mad City. Give it away now.